Hartman here on the best of the rest of economic and labor news. You need to know this. Big Pharma is about to become one of our nation's biggest tax cheats. According to a recent article over at Common Dreams, two of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world are about to merge, and they're going to skip out on paying their fair share of taxes while they're at it. Pfizer and Allergan, the makers of medications from Botox to Viagra, have announced that they're merging into the world's largest drug manufacturer. As if that news isn't bad enough, the companies will also pull off the biggest corporate tax inversion ever, just so they can skip out on U.S. taxes. By moving their new corporate headquarters to the lower tax nation of Ireland, Pfizer will sell out the taxpayers who helped build that company for the last 160 years. And they haven't even announced yet how many American jobs they'll be slashing in the process. This massive new pharmaceutical company will control many of the medications that Americans rely on, but their new monopoly will give them limitless power to raise prices and rake in more profit from the sick. Of course, Pfizer officials claim that U.S. tax rates prevent them from competing overseas, but an analysis by Americans for Tax Fairness shows that the company only paid out 6.4% of their income over the last 4 years in taxes, and their lengthy patents protect them from any real competition. This move is all about money and power. As Gustav Ando of IHS Life Services explained, this merger isn't meant to benefit patients. It isn't meant to innovate in any kind of way. And certainly the benefits won't be passed on to consumers. President Obama, Democratic senators, and various watchdog agencies are calling on Congress to make corporate inversions like this one illegal. But so far, very little has been done to rein in these tax cheating schemes. It may be too late to stop Big Pharma from getting even bigger, but we can continue the fight against corporate monopolies, and we can let companies know how we feel about tax cheats. Bus drivers in Silicon Valley are benefiting big time from collective bargaining. Earlier this month, drivers from a company called Compass Transportation ratified a new labor contract, which will bring higher wages and better benefits. That contract is the latest development in a multi-year struggle with tech giants like Google and Facebook, who hire the drivers to bring their employees to and from the tech company offices. As drivers ferried highly paid workers back and forth, they quickly realized that they were being denied the health insurance, paid holidays, and overtime pay that was being provided to their passengers. So they stood together and joined the Teamsters Union to fight for their workplace rights. The new contract will bring all of the overtime pay, holiday pay, and health insurance benefits that they deserve, and it will give drivers like Tracy Kelly a raise from $18 to $25 an hour. These drivers recognized that they have more power by standing together, and they're inspiring workers around our nation to do the same. Cities around America have criminalized homelessness, but now the homeless are fighting back. According to a recent article over at the Think Progress blog, four homeless men in Manteca, California, have filed a suit against the city, saying that the anti-homeless ordinances violate their constitutional rights. About a year ago, that city made it illegal for anyone to sleep or set up camp outside. Then they passed an ordinance against using the bathroom outdoors at all. When used whether the new laws were intended to ban homeless people, the city's chief of police said that they were only to, quote, correct the wrong. And if the correction is the homeless leaving Manteca, then that's their choice, end of quote. However, rather than simply leaving, four of the homeless men impacted by the ordinances filed suit, saying the laws were passed with, quote, a discriminatory purpose of driving the homeless from the city. And these brave men are not alone. A lawsuit has also been filed on behalf of the homeless in St. Augustine, Florida, and the Justice Department has filed a memo against similar laws in Boise, Idaho. The fact is, virtually no one is homeless by choice, and it's wrong to prosecute someone simply for being stuck out on the street. The ACLU wants Florida cops to stop seizing people's personal property. In a recent press release, the civil rights group is calling on the Florida legislature to address that state's out-of-control civil asset forfeiture practices. According to a stunning new report from the Florida Legislature's Office of Program Policy Analysis and Government Accountability, only 16% of individuals ever challenge an asset seizure, and only about 1% ever get the benefit of a full trial before their possessions are taken. In fact, there are so many asset forfeitures that the sale of them accounts for more than 2% of police agencies' operating budgets. As bad as those facts are, these statistics could be masking an even larger problem, because it is voluntary for Florida police departments to report civil asset forfeitures, and half didn't even bother to participate in the recent study. The ACLU said now that OPPAGA's report has documented how often Florida police agencies are seizing personal property, it's time for the legislature, which commissioned the report, to take action to bring an end to the abuse of this system. And finally, the AFL-CIO wants to be part of your holiday season. That's why that national union is calling on all of us to look for the union label while we're shopping this year. According to the press release, the average American will spend more than $700 on gifts this year, and all that holiday shopping could help support a heck of a lot of union jobs. And there are still many gifts that are produced with union labor. For example, all Hasbro toys and games are made by union workers, and all the cell phone service at AT&T is provided by unionized service workers. Although the holiday season shouldn't be all about gifts, if you're going to be buying, be sure to support your favorite labor groups in the process. And that's the way it is for the week of November 30th, 2015. I'm Tom Hartman on the Economic and Labor News.
From studios underwritten in part by Sputnik Radio, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, a question. Who are the real terrorists? Right? What the hell is going on? By the way, happy Monday after what? Thanksgiving? We just finished Thanksgiving weekend. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving and a nice four-day weekend. I actually did almost nothing. It's the first weekend in years that I haven't, you know, like written a chapter for a book or something. It was really nice. Anyhow, at least, you know, at our place. But it wasn't nice out in Colorado, where Colorado police officer Garrett Swayze, 44 years old, young, was one of 12 victims, one of three fatalities in this Planned Parenthood shooting. He was an elder. Officer Garrett Swayze, he was an elder in his church, which was the non-denominational evangelical church. It was called Hope Chapel. He taught guitar. He helped with the chapel's care groups. He coached and taught figure skating. This is not your average police officer. In fact, Nancy Kerrigan remembered him over the weekend. Remember the famous figure skating? She got kneecapped by Tanya Harding, wasn't it? I'm remembering right. The other two people... the other two names have been released who were murdered by this terrorist. One is a fellow by the name of Kerry Marcel Stewart. He's a 29-year-old veteran of the Iraq War. He was a DJ, an entrepreneur, a devoted father to his two young daughters. He'd gone to Planned Parenthood to support a friend. He was shot. He stepped outside to have to make a telephone call because he couldn't get cell service inside the building, and the shooter shot him. And even at that, having been literally fatally wounded, I mean, he was not yet dead, but having been wounded in it with a wound that would lead to his death within minutes, he crawled back into the clinic to warn people. And then the third person who died was Jennifer Markowski. She's a 35-year-old native of Hawaii. She had two children, a son and a daughter. She had gone again to Planned Parenthood to support a friend. This guy was going off on his no more selling baby parts thing. Now, for the record, for those of you who might spend most of your time watching Fox News or listening to right-wing hate radio or simply don't read newspapers, Planned Parenthood never has and never will sell baby parts. It's that simple. Every medical surgery place in the United States, every hospital, most outpatient clinics, has a mechanism whereby they can harvest tissue that is used in scientific research. It is against the law nationwide in every state for that tissue to be sold, whether it's harvested by Planned Parenthood or whether it's harvested by, you know, your local hospital. And it's always taken from, you know, dead and dying people. And it's literally used in research. I mean, this kind of tissue, particularly the fetal tissue, the stem cell stuff, is what they use to develop the polio vaccine that has wiped the disease off the earth, off the face of the earth, for example. But that didn't stop. That didn't stop this guy, David Dalyden. And I don't know why there's not more conversation. I'm probably mispronouncing his name. David Dalyden, D-A-L-E-I-D-E-N. He's the guy who created the heavily edited and debunked video about Planned Parenthood. At one point in one of the so-called Planned Parenthood videos, he plays video of a baby that was born stillborn or that was dying as it was born. This was not a not an abortion. This was a miscarriage, a normal miscarriage in a normal hospital. And there's the fetus, you know, on the plate dying. And as he's playing that video of this normal miscarriage, it is not a baby that has been aborted to be harvested for organs. Right? That, like I said, that is not happening. To the extent, you know, as he's playing that video, he's playing audio that implies, again, taken badly out of context, that implies that somebody at Planned Parenthood is talking about, you know, we got to save the organs. Carla Fiorina is the person who took that to the national stage in the Republican debate and lied about it on the air. Said, I saw that. It was an aborted fetus. It wasn't. It was a miscarriage, first of all. It wouldn't exist. So Carly keeps talking about it as if it's real. She will not walk that back. She will not say, oops, I made a mistake. Because, you know, if you do that in politics, you get in trouble. Which makes people like Robert Deere, the guy who shot up the clinic and murdered these three people. So why is this going on? Where'd this come from? Back in 1964, I want to step into the Wayback Machine here and give you a little bit of a history. I remember this quite well because I was 13 years old in 1964, and my dad and I went door to door for Barry Goldwater. And I remember watching, I think I remember watching, in the age of Donald Trump, saying, I know I saw those Muslims. I think I remember watching on TV when I was 13 years old, the Republican National Convention. And what I do remember very clearly is Nelson Rockefeller standing up and saying, we've got extremists in this party, and these extremists are a threat to the Republican Party. And he was booed for saying this. Here's Nelson Rockefeller.
These extremists feed on fear, hate, and terror. They encourage disunity.
And he was booed and shouted down because the extremists that he was talking about were the Barry Goldwater faction, the guys that Hillary Clinton and I were rooting for at the time. Oh, how times change. And Barry Goldwater responded with this.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
And, you know, Barry Goldwater won the day. He went on to become the Republican Party's nominee. There was this battle going on in the Republican Party between the Eisenhower Republicans, and Nixon was part of that. Nixon ran for president in 1960. He was vice president from 1952 to 1960, or 53 to 61, actually. Nixon and Rockefeller and Eisenhower were the moderate wing of the Republican Party. They believed that government could do things, right? Build the interstate highway system, put a man on the moon, national infrastructure systems, the highway system, more than half of all the power systems in the United States were then, and still are actually, owned by local municipalities, by the people, right? Publicly owned as opposed to simply private centers for some billionaire. More than half of the water systems in the country, the police departments, the fire departments, the schools, all of this, the moderate wing of the Republican Party saw these as things that should be appropriately and conservatively administered. And that's what they meant by conservative. The, quote, radicals, on the other hand, said anything that can be done by government can be done more effectively by billionaires who, by the way, can make a buck off it. And we can get in bed with these people. But that's a message that didn't sell so well. You'll recall Barry Goldwater went down in flames in 64. I want to explain to you how we got from there to here right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And let us not forget David Dalyden, right? The guy who created these videos that I think led right straight to this murder.
Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
on Radio Sputnik.
Dan Gaynor is with us right now. He's with the Business and Media Institute. In fact, he's the vice president of the Business and Media Institute. You're not going to try this global warming denier stuff on me.
There are scientists on both sides. There are hundreds of scientists on the other side.
He's smart, and he's kick-ass, and he's funny.
Bright, he's personable.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Hey.
Good morning to the National Security Agency.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Corky, watching Free Speech TV in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, it's that. I've been watching a thing about the killing out there and the clinic.
Yeah.
And all these pundits. The guy was sick. No, yes, the guy was sick. But you can lay those killings right at the feet of Kylie Fiorina and Ted Cruz and Mike Huckabee and the rest of those that keep going out there and spewing these things. What those clinics are doing is legal. It's legal under the United States Constitution. They are not doing anything wrong. They did not sell body parts. You went through that, and I tried to tell you that the day after they come out with that about the body parts. They weren't selling them. And it wasn't aborted. It was a baby. It was born, stillborn, because I watched the interview they had with the lady whose baby it was.
Right.
And you can lay that right at their feet. They're the ones that are responsible for the killing of those people. This guy is sick. You can't lay it at his feet. The guy is sick. It's an
illness. I think you can lay it at his feet, too. Just because somebody is screwed up doesn't mean that they're not responsible for committing a crime and shouldn't be punished for it. And separated from society. I would submit to you, Corky, that this guy is probably one of those people who in a thriving economy would not have become this guy. If you look at his history, if you look at, you know, he looks like the kind of person who throughout his life never quite made it, always was living on the edge, never really had, you know, any self-respect or the respect of others. And mostly had a really hard time making a living throughout much of his life. And
he was a college graduate.
Say what?
He was a college graduate.
I mean,
he had an education.
Yeah, but that does, you know, my point is that had we not outsourced all the good jobs in this country, or so many of them, had we not pursued the Reagan-Clinton trade policy of doing away with tariffs, so that manufacturing, you know, we've lost 60,000 factories just since 2000 in the United States, and probably another 50,000 in the 20, 30 years before that. If those factories had not left the United States, China would still be a third world country. We would have a GDP that would be trillions of dollars larger than it is. And there would have been a lot of good jobs where people can just like go to work, put in their 40 hours a week and be able to raise their family and have some self-respect. And I suspect, I mean, this is purely, you know, theoretical, but I suspect that had this guy had one of those kind of jobs, I mean, I grew up in a neighborhood of people with those kind of jobs. When I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, back in the 50s and 60s, most of my friends' parents worked at Oldsmobile, and they were making the equivalent of $50 an hour in today's money, or maybe it was 30 or 40, but whatever it was good enough money that, you know, dad could buy a home and or mom in some cases, usually it was dad, and get a car every couple of years and take a vacation and have a pension. And had he had that kind of life, I think, you know, one of the things we know is that as the economy collapses, mental illness explodes.
Yes, I know that.
I think this is a perfect example of it.
Got into that person.
I think we are looking at the direct results of 34 years of Reaganomics and Clintonomics. It's, you know, very straightforward stuff. And the decision by the Republican Party to factionalize, to balkanize America. And that's what I want to get into right after the break. Corky, thanks for the call. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dan Gaynor is with us right now. He's with the Business and Media Institute. In fact, he's the vice president of the Business and Media Institute. You're not going to try this global warming denier stuff on me.
There are scientists on both sides. There are hundreds of scientists on the other side.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
John in Santa Fe, you vote listening on KTRC. You voted for George Bush once.
Yes. Actually, I was embarrassed because I vote twice for George Bush.
Okay.
This is Tom Hartman.
He's smart, and he's kick-ass, and he's funny.
Bright, he's personable.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Hey.
Good morning to the National Security Agency.
Hi to the FBI. Hey, greetings to the Secret Service. All of us who are listening in to your phone call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. So here's where the Republican Party was at in 64. And by the way, the Democratic Party was going through its own crisis in 64. Up until basically 1960, the Democratic Party had been the party of the South. It had historically been the party of slavery since at least the 1830s. And it had been the party of segregation. George Wallace was a Democrat. You know, most of those guys, you know, all the, you know, the old Bull Connor and all these guys. I mean, you know, they were proud Democrats. The South was totally Democratic. And in the 60s, as Lyndon Johnson took the White House, he put the Democratic Party starkly, sharply on the side of civil rights, voting rights, all these kind of things, and moved that forward very, very aggressively and very successfully. So the Democratic Party was going through a major identity change, becoming the party of all of America and the party of working America. The Democratic Party's principal form of support had been labor unions, which are democracies in a workplace, right? I mean, labor unions don't exist if more than 50% of the workers don't want them to exist, can only exist by virtue of the workers, you know, continuing to acknowledge them, and can only engage in political activity if a majority of their members authorize it. So anyhow, you had the labor unions. So the Democratic Party is going through this. The Republican Party had split into two factions by 64. There was the Nixon, Eisenhower, Rockefeller faction, which still believed in governance. It's just that their idea of governance was slightly different from the Democrats. Well, significantly different. They really didn't think that the government should be in the business of, for example, making sure that people had access to health care. They didn't think that they had adopted democratic socialism in as much as the Republican Party back then, the establishment Republican Party, as in as much as they had given up fighting Social Security, by and large. Dwight Eisenhower famously in 1953 wrote a letter to his brother Edgar in which he said, you know, there's a small group of Texas millionaires who think we can get rid of Social Security. Their numbers are small and they are stupid. He said any political party that takes that position will never hold power again. Well, so that was, you know, on the one hand. And then you had, on the other hand, this group of ideologues who were starting to believe this new economic theory. And it really wasn't all that new. It was a repackaged version of you know, really Victorian era British economics. But it was successfully repackaged by Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago that said basically that if you let the wealthy run the country, instead of the politicians. In other words, if we answer to wealth, to the marketplace, instead of to the people, instead of the ballot box, then things will run better. And this is based on this marketplace is making a trillion decisions a second. You know, every time somebody goes on Amazon and buys something, they're making a decision and they're pushing the marketplace in a particular direction. More stuff is being bought of this particular product, so more gets made. Less of this particular product, that company might go out of business. The marketplace is very dynamic and does respond very successfully. There's a lot of truth to that. And, you know, I don't want to mess with that, right? But at the same time, there are these functions that the founders and framers, the people who wrote the Constitution of the United States, said, you know, these are the legitimate functions of government. Building roads, for example, it's in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Having a post office, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Providing for the general welfare of the citizens of the United States. It both opens and closes both Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, which is the Enumerated Powers Clause, and it's in the preamble to the Constitution. So, you know, among other things. So you had this split in the Republican Party. But the problem that the neoconservatives had, the Barry Goldwater wing had, and the reason that they went down in flames so badly in 64 was that they were basically arguing this economic argument. that, you know, get government out of the way. Let the billionaires run Social Security. Let the billionaires run the healthcare system. Let the billionaires take over our national road system, turn it into toll roads. Let the billionaires, I mean, you know, David Koch in 1980 ran on a platform of, you know, do away with everything, basically. No more Medicare, no more Social Security, no Medicaid, no unemployment insurance, no minimum wage. This was the early libertarian movement inside the Republican Party. And that, you can't win an election with that. You can't win an election by saying we want to make rich people richer and to hell with the working class and the working poor and the middle class. To hell with them. We're going to make, you know, life more difficult for them, but we're going to be sure to, you know, comfort the comfortable while we afflict the afflicted. Can't win an election doing that. So instead, in 68, Kevin Phillips wrote about this in his book, The Emerging Republican Majority. Richard Nixon took it to heart and turned it into a system. And Lee Atwater championed this. And in fact, you got that Lee Atwater clip there. And basically it was, okay, we can't, you know, by saying the 1% should run the country, you're not going to get the vote of the other 99%. So what do we do? We have to split the party into a whole bunch of factions and bring them together. So there's all those white racists down in the South that the Democratic Party just abandoned. Let's go after them. That was the Southern strategy, which you know, worked for Nixon, worked for Reagan, and worked for Bush Sr. In fact, he super racialized it with the Willie Horton ads. You know, again, and then there was, let's get the people who are afraid of gay people. Let's get the homophobes in. And so we'll put ballot issues on about, you know, to defend marriage. And even in places where nobody was, quote, assaulting marriage, because it would bring out Republican voters. Let's put God on, you know, on the ballot. We'll put ballot measures. We'll put, you know, the Ten Commandments and public buildings, you know. So basically it was like and anti-abortion. Bring out the single issue voters and bring them all together under the Republican banner. And then you'll have a large enough tent that you can actually win elections. And that's been the Republican Party's strategy basically since 1968. And here's the problem. It's starting to fray. In fact, it's starting to actually damage our country. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
You know what you're seeing, and Heather Cox Richardson wrote about this brilliantly, I think, over at Salon, is Donald Trump being the final result of the Southern strategy.
Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dan Gaynor is with us right now. He's with the Business and Media Institute. In fact, he's the vice president of the Business and Media Institute. You're not going to try this global warming denier stuff, are you?
There are scientists on both sides. There are hundreds of scientists on the other side.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
John in Santa Fe, you vote, listening on KTRC, you voted for George Bush once.
Yes. Actually, I was embarrassed because I vote twice for George Bush.
Okay.
This is Tom Hartman.
He's smart, and he's kick-ass, and he's funny.
Bright, he's personable.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Hey.
Good morning to the National Security Agency.
Hi to the FBI. Hey, greetings to the Secret Service. All of us who are listening in to your phone call. Yes,
this is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman here on the best of the rest of economic and labor news. You need to know this. Big Pharma is about to become one of our nation's biggest tax cheats. According to a recent article over at Common Dreams, two of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world are about to merge, and they're going to skip out on paying their fair share of taxes while they're at it. Pfizer and Allergan, the makers of medications from Botox to Viagra, have announced that they're merging into the world's largest drug manufacturer. As if that news isn't bad enough, the companies will also pull off the biggest corporate tax inversion ever, just so they can skip out on U.S. taxes. By moving their new corporate headquarters to the lower tax nation of Ireland, Pfizer will sell out the taxpayers who helped build that company for the last 160 years. And they haven't even announced yet how many American jobs they'll be slashing in the process. This massive new pharmaceutical company will control many of the medications that Americans rely on, but their new monopoly will give them limitless power to raise prices and rake in more profit from the sick. Of course, Pfizer officials claim that U.S. tax rates prevent them from competing overseas, but An analysis by Americans for Tax Fairness shows that the company only paid out 6.4% of their income over the last 4 years in taxes, and their lengthy patents protect them from any real competition. This move is all about money and power. As Gustav Ando of IHS Life Services explained, this merger isn't meant to benefit patients. It isn't meant to innovate in any kind of way. And certainly the benefits won't be passed on to consumers. President Obama, Democratic senators, and various watchdog agencies are calling on Congress to make corporate inversions like this one illegal. But so far, very little has been done to rein in these tax cheating schemes. It may be too late to stop Big Pharma from getting even bigger, but we can continue the fight against corporate monopolies, and we can let companies know how we feel about tax cheats. Bus drivers in Silicon Valley are benefiting big time from collective bargaining. Earlier this month, drivers from a company called Compass Transportation ratified a new labor contract, which will bring higher wages and better benefits. That contract is the latest development in a multi-year struggle with tech giants like Google and Facebook, who hire the drivers to bring their employees to and from the tech company offices. As drivers ferried highly paid workers back and forth, they quickly realized that they were being denied the health insurance, paid holidays, and overtime pay that was being provided to their passengers. So they stood together and joined the Teamsters Union to fight for their workplace rights. The new contract will bring all of the overtime pay, holiday pay, and health insurance benefits that they deserve, and it will give drivers like Tracy Kelly a raise from $18 to $25 an hour. These drivers recognized that they have more power by standing together, and they're inspiring workers around our nation to do the same. Cities around America have criminalized homelessness, but now the homeless are fighting back. According to a recent article over at the Think Progress blog, four homeless men in Manteca, California, have filed a suit against the city, saying that the anti-homeless ordinances violate their constitutional rights. About a year ago, that city made it illegal for anyone to sleep or set up camp outside. Then they passed an ordinance against using the bathroom outdoors at all. When used whether the new laws were intended to ban homeless people, the city's chief of police said that they were only to, quote, correct the wrong. And if the correction is the homeless leaving Manteca, then that's their choice, end of quote. However, rather than simply leaving, four of the homeless men impacted by the ordinances filed suit, saying the laws were passed with, quote, a discriminatory purpose of driving the homeless from the city. And these brave men are not alone. A lawsuit has also been filed on behalf of the homeless in St. Augustine, Florida, and the Justice Department has filed a memo against similar laws in Boise, Idaho. Fact is, virtually no one is homeless by choice, and it's wrong to prosecute someone simply for being stuck out on the street. The ACLU wants Florida cops to stop seizing people's personal property. In a recent press release, the civil rights group is calling on the Florida legislature to address that state's out-of-control civil asset forfeiture practices. According to a stunning new report from the Florida Legislature's Office of Program Policy Analysis and Government Accountability, only 16% of individuals ever challenge an asset seizure, and only about 1% ever get the benefit of a full trial before their possessions are taken. In fact, there are so many asset forfeitures that the sale of them accounts for more than 2% of police agencies' operating budgets. As bad as those facts are, these statistics could be masking an even larger problem, because it is voluntary for Florida police departments to report civil asset forfeitures, and half didn't even bother to participate in the recent study. The ACLU said now that OPPAGA's report has documented how often Florida police agencies are seizing personal property, it's time for the legislature, which commissioned the report, to take action to bring an end to the abuse of this system. And finally, the AFL-CIO wants to be part of your holiday season. That's why that national union is calling on all of us to look for the union label while we're shopping this year. According to the press release, the average American will spend more than $700 on gifts this year, and all that holiday shopping could help support a heck of a lot of union jobs. And there are still many gifts that are produced with union labor. For example, all Hasbro toys and games are made by union workers, and all the cell phone service at AT&T is provided by unionized service workers. Although the holiday season shouldn't be all about gifts, if you're going to be buying, be sure to support your favorite labor groups in the process. And that's the way it is for the week of November 30th, 2015. I'm Tom Hartman on the Economic and Labor News. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, Mike Huckabee actually said the right thing. It took 3 days for him to do it. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there wondering why none of the Republican candidates took any position on this at all for several days. And, you know, I think the reason is fairly obvious. You know, you're stirring people up. I mean, here are the actual statistics. This was put together by UNC and Duke University, a study that was published in the New York Times last June. Islam-inspired terror attacks accounted in the United States for 50 fatalities over the past 13 and a half years. I mean, obviously 9/11 is an outlier, but, you know, on average, over 13 and a half years, 50 people were killed in the United States in the name of Islam. 50. During that same period, right-wing extremists, people who identified themselves as conservatives, averaged 337 attacks a year. Okay, this is the Muslims killed 50 people over a 13-year period. 337 attacks per year, causing a total of 254 fatalities over that 13-year period. So in other words, your odds are seven times more likely in the United States of being killed by a right-wing extremist than by being killed by a Muslim extremist. But here's what Mike Huckabee had to say, and I think he's right.
Regardless of why he did it, what he did is domestic terrorism, and what he did is absolutely abominable.
It is domestic terrorism. Why aren't we calling this guy a domestic terrorist? I mean, why from the very beginning wasn't he called a domestic terrorist?
They say, well, you know, he said no more baby parts, but he said other things too.
Right. Guy goes into a Planned Parenthood clinic, kills three people, wounds, seven more, as I recall, or eight more, or nine more. Yelling about baby parts, and we got no idea why he's doing this. I'm telling you, if he'd been wearing a Kafka is or whatever the head gear is called that's commonly worn in Iraq, if he had been wearing one of those things and he'd been shouting, you know, Allah Akbar, they would have immediately, and he'd shot up, you know, any building, it would have immediately been, oh, it's Muslim terrorism, right? If he had been a black guy and he'd been shouting black power as he was killing white people, or for that matter, you know, like Dylann Roof, a white guy who was killing black people, although they were very, very reluctant to call Dylann Roof a terrorist. It took several days, again, for this to be referred to as terror. Anyway, pick up your phone calls here. Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm very, very angry about what happened at Planned Parenthood. And I'm angry that Planned Parenthood has to have a safe house and bulletproof vests, closed circuit television, like they're in Benghazi or Kabul or something. This is a war on women. My daughter, she takes here in Texas, we have abstinence only, so she has a teacher that's telling her that she's like a piece of chewing gum, and that she's a used piece of chewing gum if she has sex. So she comes home and she says, "Oh no, I'm a good girl, Mom." Well, all I can say is, what is a bad girl?
Right.
This is upset. You know, can she ever go to a Planned Parenthood safely? I don't know.
You know.
I don't know if I'd want her to do that because, you know what? We are under attack.
Yeah.
And Planned Parenthood is under attack. And I went to Planned Parenthood when I was in school because it's free. A lot of college students are broke.
Yeah. And 3% of their budget has to do with abortions. 97% doesn't.
Yeah, but I don't care what percentage. That is illegal. Abortion is legal.
You're right.
It is our right. It doesn't. I don't care if it's 75% abortion or 99% abortion.
Yeah.
This is a constitutional right. And they have no right to do this to us, to stop us from exercising our right.
Yeah. Yeah. Pursue your agenda politically, rather, which they've been doing and doing quite successfully, shutting down abortion clinics all over the country.
Right.
Let's not do the hyperbole, Carly, that brings the crazies out, because that's what's going on.
What they did was a call to arms. When they sit there and they talk about body baby parts and keeping babies alive to harvest their brains, that is a call to arms to those people who are willing to take up a gun and shoot people.
Right. You're absolutely right.
Babies. Because what are you going to say? Oh, they're killing babies.
Right. Yep. Anita, thank you for the call. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Yeah, 100% agreement with Anita that we don't need to justify what small percentage or whatever percentage of abortions Planned Parenthood does. It's a constitutional right.
Yeah.
It could be 100%.
Yep.
of a, you know, that's just out. But I think the language, I was just angered by the kid gloves that the media took with this case, and asking questions of, like, the mayor of Colorado Springs. Was Planned Parenthood targeted? I mean, is the assumption that, no, these were just a bunch of random bullets that happened to converge on Planned Parenthood? Of course they were targeted, and it was more than hyperbole that this was an incitement. This was an incitement to a terrorist attack by the Carly Fiorinas, the candidates of the Republican Party, hate conservative talk radio. And the reason I say that is because what result were they asking for? Because not one piece of cross-examined evidence has taken one single step in the due process of law. Yet we are going to now, or we were going to have, congressional hearings on Planned Parenthood. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call Congress and say, yes, let's have them. Let's have congressional hearings now and find out who incited this terrorist attack, what the lies were used for.
Yeah. What they were used for, Paul, was to elect politicians, and there's a few Democrats, but it's mostly Republicans who have staked out this territory. You know, they need these single issue voters in order to get Republicans elected, so that those Republicans can cut taxes on billionaires and frankly raise taxes on working class people, which is literally in the economic plan of every single one of the Republican candidates. And you know, this is what they've been doing since Reagan. You know,
yeah. Well, but of course, then we look at the victims, not only the three, a police officer, as you noted, an Iraq war veteran, and a mother of two, are now the deceased victims, to show us how evil Planned Parenthood is. And I thought about, you know, I didn't know at first, but there are pregnant women in there who could have been, I don't know what the wounded victims were. But this, obviously, a mother of two, and of course the police officer was a father. There are now children without parents.
Right. And Planned Parenthood provides a lot of services for pregnant women. So, you know.
Right. And a lot of just regular health services.
Yeah. In fact, in many parts of the country, they're basically the only place where poor women can get any kind of gynecological services or birth control help.
The almost stepping away or looking away, it's the elephant in the room. Looking away and not saying, asking the media, I thought, at least the Sunday shows that I listen to, asking, you know, was this targeted? And nobody wants to use the T word.
Right.
Because after Paris, many of us are saying, hey, what's the big deal? That could happen here. Anybody can go buy a gun and do exactly what they did.
Right.
And that was an attack not only on Planned Parenthood, that was an attack when killing the officer. And here's the other thing, Tom, I want to just bring this up. A white guy, a 40-something white guy with an assault weapon who attacks a Planned Parenthood and a five-hour attack, and what do they, after killing a police officer, what do? They talk him into surrendering. Whereas how many young black men, no talk about anything, just shoot him dead.
Yeah.
Talk him into surrendering after already killing one of their own. They talk him into surrendering. I mean, this is not... The discrepancies are so obvious, it's just disgusting.
Yeah, you're suggesting a little white privilege there, Paul. I wouldn't disagree with that. Thanks a lot for the call. Terry in Newburg, Oregon. Hey, Terry, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Say, just a thought. I mean, there was this video that was produced, an anti-Muslim video that was produced and incited a lot of rioting and unrest in the Middle East. And that the producer of that that video was subsequently jailed. I'm wondering why this highly edited propaganda piece against Planned Parenthood, the producer of that particular piece of garbage, wasn't prosecuted as well, or is not being prosecuted. This was obviously meant to do nothing but incite violence. Incite outrage amongst the crazy.
Terry, just you know, kind of for the record here, in both cases, in both of these video cases, we have this thing called free speech. People can say whatever they want, as awful as it may be. The guy who did the Muslim video was not prosecuted for doing the Muslim video. He was prosecuted for a parole violation. He was on parole. He was not supposed to be doing what he was doing. And so, you know, you can't. As I said, I think that this guy should be being called out more often. And there should be a lot more attention to him. I mean, you know, he drew all the attention to Planned Parenthood, but he did it by taking, you know, 10 hours of audio and video and editing it down in ways that make it seem like it's quite literally make it seem like it's something that it is not. And I mean, he admitted this on CNN last week, right? It's all a scam. Terry, thank you for the call. But it's a wedge issue scam. See, this is the whole wedge issue thing. I'll share Lee Atwater with you in a little bit. Back to your calls in just a second.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be right back with more of your calls after this.
Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program
on Radio Sputnik.
Dan Gaynor is with us right now. He's at the Business and Media Institute. In fact, he's the vice president of the Business and Media Institute. You're not going to try this global warming denier stuff on me.
There are scientists on both sides. There are hundreds of scientists on the other side.
He's smart, and he's kick-ass, and he's funny.
Bright, he's personable.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Hey.
Good morning to the National Security Agency.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Davis, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Radford, Virginia. Hey, Davis, what's on your mind today?
Oh, good morning, Tom. Yeah, you remember when Congresswoman Gabby Giffords was shot in the head at a mall, and the man who shot her had been at a previous meeting earlier that year or last year before that, when he had asked her a question. He said, what the difference does anything make if words don't matter? And she didn't answer that question. I think it probably sounded kind of crazy, or, you know, what could she say? But the people that knew this man said that that was what made him the most mad, when she didn't answer his question. He really simmered on that. And then he finally came back and shot her. Well, with this, to tie this with what's happened here at Colorado Springs, what he was saying, what does anything matter if words don't matter? Well, words do matter. It was words spoken by Carly and other people who were playing this card with a Republican Party. And basically, that's what I have to say.
Yeah, I find it remarkable that, over at Media Matters, they've pretty much laid this out, that with the exception of Fox News, every television network has corrected Carly Fiorina's comments. Fox News hasn't, to the best of my knowledge. I should pull the Media Matters piece out and share the details with you. But there is a subpopulation in the United States of people who principally get their news from Fox, so-called news, who are actually, and there have been two good university studies on this now, are actually more misinformed than people who get no news at all, people who read no newspapers and watch nothing on television or the internet. And that misinformation is the result of this, you know, partisan program. Fox News was envisioned in the Nixon White House by Roger Ailes when he worked for Richard Nixon in the 1970s, early 1970s, as a product called GOP TV, where every day they would produce this content, they'd ship it to TV stations all over the country with a fleet of planes, sort of like, because that was back in the day of videotape, sort of like FedEx. And Richard Nixon couldn't raise the money for it. And so, Ailes put it on the back burner until in the mid to late 90s, he ran across a billionaire, Rupert Murdoch, who was willing to lose $100 million a year for 5 years on Fox News, because that's how much they lost. They lost $100 million their first year, and forever the next 4 years, somewhere in that neighborhood. And then, you know, finally, after their sixth year, they were profitable. But, you know, he had very, very deep pockets, and he was willing to do that. And it's all about, it's Republican TV. It's all about getting the party into place. And it's not even for any particular value other than standing up for the interests of the economic class that's represented by Rupert Murdoch, the billionaires. So, Davis, thanks for the call. Good poll.
Thank
we got 15.
You,
yeah, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. This is a real problem in the United States. The siloization of information. It's like, you know, people watching Fox News and not watching anything else. Or on the other hand, people watching, you know, or just listening to my program or MSNBC or something like that and not checking out what the other side has to say. I really think we need to be understanding at a deeper level what's really going on. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Rich in Greenwood, Indiana. Hey, Rich, what's up?
Good morning.
Morning.
I want to highlight some stuff that you just said. White male privilege is this foundational source of so much of this wrong. I'm a feminist. I am my mother's son. And I'm so informed by a perspective that respects women, and I am my mother's son.
Okay.
Anyway, back over the weekend, head to head on Al Jazeera, had this guy Arthur Laffer, who I'd never heard of before.
Oh, I've debated Arthur Laffer on this program. He came up with the Laffer curve, which Reagan used as the rationalization to drop the top tax rate on people making more than $3 million a year. From 74% down to 25%.
He's a joker. I tell you, I don't know how he says what he says and keeps a straight face. And he's so earnest. I mean, the guy is a constant lie. Okay, anyway.
Well, he's a very good con man, and he's a very well-paid con man. And that's, increasingly, that's what the Republican Party has to do. You know, convince you that... You know, like Reagan did, you know, oh, we're going to give tax cuts. We're going to give huge tax cuts. The average American gets, what, $132 or something like that? But the rich people got billions. I mean, it's actually been trillions now. It looks like it's been about $7 to $8 trillion has been transferred from the working class to the top 1% since Reagan changed the tax policies. And that's a massive amount of money.
It is. Well, one other thing over the weekend was Sonali introducing Chris Hedges on a truth dig. And I urge people to check into that. That was brilliant. He concludes by saying, I do not fight fascists because I think I will win. I fight fascists because they are fascists.
Yeah, that's a good statement. Rich, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Lucretia in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hey, Lucretia, you're at Ground Zero. What's on your mind today?
Well, I called in last week and spoke with you for the first time and told you thank you because this is the kind of stuff that we're dealing with here. We have a very large extremist group base here in Colorado Springs. We used to have 3 Planned Parenthood clinics here, Planned Parenthood clinics. They shut them all down and turned them into that one.
Is that, by the way, is that the clinic where Dr. Tiller was working?
No, it's not.
Okay.
Thank goodness.
Oh, that was in Kansas. That's right. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. It was in the same kind of region.
Yeah.
But we are dealing with a very, very big extremist group here. We have a focus on the family, and we had John Morris. I was trying to touch on that with you last week, how they had recalled him here because he was actually just implementing the laws that Governor Hickenlooper had put into place after the Aurora Theater shootings. And the NRA actually came here and had a very big movement in recalling him. And so I just thank you so much for even bringing this to light, because a lot of the media here in Colorado Springs, everybody listens to Fox News. And you go into Burger King and Fox News is playing. So it's very, they eat it up.
Yeah. No, it's GOP TV. I got it. Lucretia, thank you for the call. And thank you for sharing your perspective with us. Michael in Woodbridge, Virginia. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, no, isn't this like the Republic? Benghazi moment, like that attack was incited over a video. Now this attack is incited over a video. I mean, are they going to put Carly Farina on 11 hours of congressional hearings?
Yeah, 13 hours, I think it was, or whatever it was.
13 hours.
Yeah, 11 hours.
You know, This is Devin Gotti on it. Four dead Americans dead, three dead Americans here.
Mm-hmm.
When are they going to call us terrorism and see that words have meaning? This is annoying.
Yeah, I do not disagree at all. I do not disagree at all. Thanks a lot for the call, Michael. Alvin in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Alvin, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Man, I've learned so much from you. I hate to disagree with you. But the one thing is, you spend a lot of time trying to reach over to the other side to find fairness on that other side. Huckabee's quote, if you listen to that whole clip, he later on goes on and say terrorism is terrorism, no matter whether it's what's happening outside the abortion clinic or what's happening behind the walls of the abortion clinic and how many innocent babies are killed each year in a terroristic act inside.
Somehow I missed the second half of that, Alvin. Thank you for informing me about it. Jeez. Thank you. Bill in La Quinta, California. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Morning, Tom. Boy, you're a voice of enlightenment, and I'm so glad you're there. The whole thing, all these shootings, ISIS would love to be able to have the number of innocents killed in this country that the NRA is directly responsible for by opposing intelligent gun control laws. So my question to you, isn't it long overdue that the NRA be listed as a registered as a domestic terrorist organization?
You know, I was this morning, I noticed, and I meant to bring it in with me in the drawer next to my bed, my NRA membership card from 2008, which was the last year that I was a member of the NRA. And, you know, I thought about bringing it in and waving it around and saying, yeah, the total number of people who've died at the hands of terrorists since 2004 in the United States is 315, according to the Dallas mayor, apparently. The total number of people who have been killed by firearms on U.S. soil in the same period of time, 2004 to 2013, American deaths by firearms on U.S. soil, 316,545. So where is our real problem?
I refer to our Congress as the NRA whorehouse of representatives. Isn't it time that we call these people out? I mean, I know there's been a two-page spread in the New York Times listing all of the members of Congress who are NRA lackeys or whatever you want to call them.
But it's not just the NRA. I mean, you've got these guys who are taking money from big fossil fuel who are out there saying there's no such thing as climate change. And you can actually, it's measurable. The more money they take from big fossil fuel, from Koch Industries, ExxonMobil, the more likely they are to say that there's no such thing as climate change. The less money they take from fossil fuels, the more likely they are to agree with the actual science. It's like, it's not just this issue. There's a whole variety of issues where there's money at stake, and that's the bottom line for at least for most of the Republican Party. Bill, thanks for the call.
Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dan Gaynor is with us right now. He's at the Business and Media Institute. In fact, he's the vice president of the Business and Media Institute. You're not going to try this global warming denier stuff on me.
There are scientists on both sides. There are hundreds of scientists on the other side.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
John in Santa Fe, you vote, listening on KTRC, you voted for George Bush once.
Yes. Actually, I was embarrassed because I vote twice for George Bush.
Okay.
This is Tom Hartman.
He's smart, and he's kick-ass, and he's funny.
Right, he's personable.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Hey.
Good morning to the National Security Agency.
Hi to the FBI. Hey, greetings to the Secret Service. All of us who are listening in to your phone call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.